Case number 15-5264, Pursuing America's Greatness, Appellant v. Federal Election Commission, Office of General Counsel. Mr. Kuchinski for the appellant, Mr. Kitcher for the appellee.
Sheena. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Jason Torchinsky with Holtzman Vogel, Josefiak and Torchinsky here on behalf of Pursuing America's Greatness. We're here today because Pursuing America's Greatness can't speak how it wants, but its opponents can. This Court just recently affirmed the constitutional value of free speech when it decided Van Hollen v. FEC, and the Federal Election Commission comes before you today asking this Court to approve its role as censor of certain speech by certain entities because of the content of the speech and the identity of the speaker. This is the sort of government action that the Supreme Court has repeatedly warned against. Today, the FEC, in expanding the reach of
its... Excuse me, Mr. Churchins, we actually have a rule that statements aren't to be read. So if you could speak to us instead of reading your statement, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Sure, no problem, Your Honor. So today, Your Honors, the FEC, in expanding its prohibition, seeks to regulate the social media and internet identifiers that political action committees choose to use. This is just a classic example of how the government is attempting to regulate the content of speech.
So they say it's all part of a disclosure regime.
They do, Your Honor. But we think that that's not correct. The Supreme Court in Reed v. Town of Gilbert tells us when you're looking at a government restriction on speech, the first thing you do is look at the text of what the statute or regulation says. Here it says you can't use certain names in projects or programs unless it includes a clear opposition. And that, Your Honor, is where the district court went wrong. The district court skipped, because the FEC came in and said our justification for this is that it's part of the disclosure and disclaimer regime, the district court skipped the analysis that the Supreme Court said you have to do in these cases, which is look at the text, look at the challenged government action on its face first. And in this case...
Well, if I look at the statute on its face, it appears to me that you're not challenging that. In fact, you don't have standing to challenge.
No, Your Honor, we're not challenging the statute. Pursuing America's Greatness doesn't include the name
of the candidate.
Right. We're not challenging the statute. We're challenging the regulation as applied here to social media identifiers and internet website URLs.
Right.
So this is an as-applied challenge. This is not a challenge to the underlying statute because PAC does not include the name of the candidate.
And in your complaint, you made a representation that the... situations on Twitter or Facebook or the web were not being used, would not be used to raise money.
That is exactly what Pursuing America's Greatness said. They said that they would not be raising money at these web pages.
All right. So now we're faced with a situation where Mr. Huckabee is no longer a candidate. And the only representation we have about whether this case involves financial fundraising is the one in a complaint that's no longer valid. So where do we look to find out whether, in fact, the case is as narrow as it was before Mr. Huckabee withdrew?
Your Honor, I think you can look to the in response to the suggestion of mootness filed by the FEC, we filed a response that included an affidavit from the executive director of Pursuing America's Greatness that indicates that the organization intends to continue operating, intends to continue advocating for candidates, and continues to seek to be able to do what it said it was going to do with respect to Mr. Huckabee, but just now with respect to other candidates.
I don't recall anything in that affidavit that talked about fundraising. Is it?
I don't know that we specifically mentioned it in fundraising, Your Honor, but it's consistent with the...
Well, that was, that's the question. I think you would agree that the strongest argument that the Commission has is that there would be confusion and perhaps fraud in fundraising activities. And you reply and say that there can be, or the Commission says that there can be fraud and confusion in matters other than fundraising. So we don't know at this moment we don't have a representation that these other candidates that your organization is going to support would involve fundraising activity.
Your Honor, I guess I would get back to whether it does or does not. Even if PAG wanted to pursue fundraising on these pages, it's still a content-based restriction on speech that's not permissible. The FEC's concern about...
Well, there are plenty of content-based restrictions on speech that are totally permissible. Have you ever read the National Labor Relations Act?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's... It deals with speech, and it deals with picketing, and so on and so forth, so long as it's related to a labor dispute. But you're not claiming that the National Labor Relations Act is unconstitutional.
No, Your Honor, we're not challenging that. And what we're challenging
here... And there are other examples.
Yeah, I mean, what we're challenging here is the FEC saying, if you like a candidate, you can't put up a website that says, I like name of candidate, but if you don't like the candidate, you can come in and say, I don't like candidate X.
But you agree, don't you, that our case law has said that we will give more deference to the government when there is confusion that might be fraudulent, right? And fundraising is sort of in the wheelhouse of that, right?
Well, except that, Your Honor, in some of the fundraising cases where the Supreme Court has looked at sort of restrictions on charitable fundraising, the government has said you can't just blanket say you can't do this. You've got to come up with some narrowly tailored response. And, Your Honor,
so are these new sites going to be involved in fundraising?
Your Honor, we don't intend
them to be. Or was that just a mistake in the affidavit?
We do not intend them to be, Your Honor. That was probably an omission from the affidavit on our part that we could cure.
It's a pretty critical distinction, though. I mean, fundraising seems to be one of your strongest arguments about the Huckabee site was that there was no fundraising involved. It was, you know, just voter confusion is the only issue, and our case law has been skeptical of voter confusion when it comes to forming opinions. But we haven't been skeptical about voter confusion when it comes to fundraising.
Your Honor,
seems to me a rather significant oversight.
Your Honor, if we omitted that from the affidavit and the court finds that to be critical, we could submit a revised affidavit. In this case, the suggestion of mootness was filed, you know, 5 days before oral argument, and we were both preparing for argument and preparing a reply at the same time. So if we omitted that from the affidavit, we could go back and get a revised affidavit.
Your organization is incorporated in Arkansas?
Yes.
Do the Articles of Incorporation mention that its purpose is to support Mr. Huckabee?
I do not believe the Articles of Pursuing America's Greatness mention Mike Huckabee. Not at all.
They're not in the appendix here, are they?
I do not believe it is, Your Honor, but it's a public document. So, if I may, I mean, Your Honors, getting back to the guidance that the Supreme Court gave in Reed v. Town of Gilbert, when you look here at what the government is doing, they're looking at the content of your speech, and they're saying, if you take this viewpoint, you can't speak this way, but if you take this other viewpoint, you can. And for that reason, Your Honors, we believe that this needs to be enjoined. This is what the FEC calls a ban on speech, and that is just not permissible. As Amiki pointed out, if particularly on the Internet, if you're trying to attract someone to your website or to your Facebook page or to your Twitter handle, that the content, the words, the combination of letters that make up words that make up those URLs and those social media identifiers are critical in someone being able to even locate your page in the first place. And with respect to the FEC's arguments about, you know, preventing confusion, there's a whole other section of FECA, as this court pointed out in Common Cause, that requires certain disclaimers and disclosures that should alleviate any need for confusion. And in fact, this court pointed that out in two different footnotes in Common Cause.
Are those disclaimers, they have to be in a certain spot in the body of the whatever text? And they have to be a certain size and a certain color?
The disclaimers are pretty well regulated. There's not a regulation with respect to the location, but it has to be in the communication. For video, it says there has to be a reasonable degree of color contrast. And for print ads, it has to be at least 12-point font. And it has to be contained within a text box.
Do the disclaimer requirements apply to a situation where the posting on whatever site is in opposition to a candidate?
The disclaimer requirements apply regardless of whether you're for a candidate, against a candidate, neutral on a candidate. The disclaimer requirements apply to any political committee. In this particular case, the restriction applies only to unauthorized committees, which is just one subclass of political committees, and also doesn't apply to corporations that aren't political committees, groups that aren't political committees that make independent expenditures, or even individuals. In other words, when PAG took over the I Like Mike Huckabee website from the LLC in Los Angeles that owned it, that LLC was not restricted by this. This only became illegal when, well, it wasn't, this advisory opinion hadn't been issued when it took over the contract, but from the time that advisory opinion was issued, if that web address had never been acquired from the LLC, the LLC could have kept doing it. It was only because of the identity of the speaker, in this case an unauthorized committee, that it became subject to the FEC's speech ban. And that's why, Your Honors, we think the district court went wrong. The district court totally skipped the content-based analysis, said, oh, well, you know, the FEC said it's part of our disclosure regime, so we're just going to skip the whole content-based analysis and go right to an intermediate level of scrutiny. And, you know, we pointed out in our reply brief, Minnesota Concerned Citizens for Life, where the Eighth Circuit said, look, this is not a legislative labeling exercise. You actually have to look at what they did in the first place, and here what they did was create a regulation that determines, based on the content of your speech, whether you may speak in the way you want or not. And, Your Honor, I also think it's a little bit different. I mean, I'm not a Labor Relations Act expert, but, you know, in this case, they're actually looking and saying, if you oppose it, you can say it, but if you support it, you can't. And that's where we think the FEC went wrong and why Pursuing America's Greatness is entitled to its injunction. And with that, I think I reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Charles Kitcher for the FEC. May it please the Court. The District Court's decision denying a preliminary injunction to the appellant should be affirmed. The district court correctly determined that with respect to the likelihood of success on the merits, the appellant wasn't likely to succeed on the merits because the regulation at issue in this case is part of FECA's disclosure program. It's a disclosure regulation. And this court, the Supreme Court, and Congress have all overwhelmingly approved of the FECA requirements and the FEC regulations that allow the public and help the public understand who is behind the election.
Reed, doesn't Reed tells disclose. Us to look at the text, right? And you look at the text, and distinction is here based on content.
Your Honor, Reed,
so how do we get beyond that? Reed's changed things, right?
Your Honor, I disagree. I don't believe Reed has changed things. The Supreme Court's decision in Reed was a sign case. It did not mention disclosure rules. It did not mention campaign finance disclosure rules in particular. There's almost 40 years of jurisprudence, Supreme Court jurisprudence, from Buckley v. Aleo to Citizens United, holding that the standard for scrutiny, constitutional scrutiny, with respect to FECA's disclosure requirements is intermediate scrutiny. And surely, if the Supreme Court in Reed were attempting to overrule that sub silentio, it would have mentioned it.
But I don't understand the disclosure label to this precise ban.
Sure.
It's a ban on words. We don't usually call that disclosure requirement.
It is disclosure, Judge Kavanaugh, and the reason it's disclosure is because what it's disclosing is the candidate's authorization, the committee's authorization status.
There's an easier way to disclose
that.
Do
a disclaimer then.
Well, but Congress concluded that in order to prevent confusion and to adequately disclose to the public the sources behind election-related speech, that committees needed to follow the name requirement and the disclaimer requirements. And this is no different from the disclaimer requirement that runs at the end of a television ad that says, you know, for example, I'm Mike Huckabee and I approve this message.
Whatever happened to the First Amendment principle that protected anonymous speech? It's like the Federalist Papers.
The First Amendment principle that's at issue in this case is whether the appellant can use a name of a candidate. It's not trying to do anonymous speech. It's trying to speak in a way that uses the candidate. It's trying to speak to the public using a name that is the candidate's name, and as the record below demonstrates, is likely to confuse the public about who is speaking.
But it's core political speech to say, I like a particular political candidate or official. And that's at the core of First Amendment.
And a candidate's name is at the core of the decision to vote.
Yeah, you
right?
can't say you can't communicate your message without saying the person's name.
But of course, Pursuing America America's Greatness has communicated its message, as the FEC noted when it passed this regulation. The committee is free to say throughout its communication in highlighted font, in highlighted text,
we're in the digital age. The way you find out who are the supporters out there is you do a Google search or you do a Facebook page search, and it's the title. It's not going to be in the text. It's the title. What I don't understand is if disclosure is so critical here, it seems to me there's some very easy ways to handle that, and that is to say on your I Like Mike page, the very first thing that you have to come up with, say, this is not an authorized campaign. Why?
Well, I have several responses to that. First, Your Honor, the FEC, the commission, unanimously and bipartisanly approved this requirement. And when this was at the rulemaking stage.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What is that supposed to mean?
Relevant.
Well, they're the experts. I mean, with respect to.
They're the experts in what?
They're the experts in campaign finance
and
regulation.
And they're the experts in the First Amendment, the Constitution.
Of course, Your Honor. But the FEC considered whether or not other type of disclosures were sufficient, whether bolder disclosures were sufficient. And the type of regulation that Your Honor is requiring is, in fact, really no different from the type of regulation that's issued here. Because when you compel a committee to say one thing, for example, in a type of disclaimer box like Your Honor is describing, the committee can't say something else. For example, if you have to say that your ad is an unauthorized ad, you can't say that it is authorized. That's the essence of disclosure. You have to honestly disclose what's going on.
I can say anything if they're barred from saying I like Mike Huckabee in their name, they can say that in the text, right?
And absolutely.
So why doesn't that cause confusion?
It may cause confusion, but Your Honor,
you can't regulate it. And the reason you can't regulate it is because what?
Well, I was going to say that the FEC deals in a First Amendment sensitive area, and the fact that it hasn't come up with a cudgel to abate regulation doesn't mean that its regulation isn't narrowly tailored. The FEC has for decades attempted to narrowly tailor this regulation as closely as possible. That's why in 1994 it enacted the opposition exception upon which appellants rely so heavily. That opposition exception was enacted or passed so that the out of recognition that the oppositional name, you know, I loathe my country.
Do you agree that our concern about voter confusion is not as significant when we're not dealing with fundraising?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. And
thank you.
the court below found that even in the absence of a direct solicitation, like the instance that's presented in this case, notwithstanding whether the affidavit is deficient, the court found that there could be instances of fundraising abuse even in that context, because committees could take advantage, even if they're not actively or directly soliciting funds, they can take advantage and exploit confusion about their names. And that's especially
so. Was there any evidence put on to that effect?
Sure. Well, as we cited in our merits brief, the actor Daniel Craig, for example, was famously apparently confused about a committee that had the name Bernie in its name. He thought he was contributing to the authorized Bernie.
No, but that was a fundraising.
Right.
I thought Judge Griffith asked you about situations that didn't involve fundraising, and your reply was even then it could lead to fundraising. And my question, and the district court so found or whatever, my question is, what evidence is there of that?
We haven't actually conducted discovery in the case because
there's no evidence to support that.
And aren't we traditionally skeptical of arguments that allow the government to regulate in, you call this a First Amendment sensitive area. I think I agree with Judge Kavanaugh's description, core political speech. We're a little skeptical of government citing voter confusion when it comes to regulating core political speech, unless there's the threat of fraud or corruption, right? Because where would be the limits on that? Then we have the FEC deciding how voters are confused about opinions and represent. I mean, that there's no limit to that.
No, Your Honor. In Citizens United, eight justices agreed with the disclosure ruling, which was
disclosure. That was forcing you to speak, not preventing you from speaking, which strikes me as quite a bit different.
Well, our position in this case is that the regulation is disclosure. That's how it was held by this court in the Common Cause case, which specifically said that the statutory provision is disclosure. And here, the regulation is disclosure. And some disclosure requirements, like the requirement to state whether or not an ad is authorized or not, or that it has to be on the screen for 4 seconds, or that the font has to be a certain size, all of those requirements, by definition and function, preclude not doing those things.
So what about a book? Oh, I like Mike Huckabee book. Could the government ban such a title of a book consistently with the First Amendment?
No, as we said in our brief, Your Honor, the title of a book, I Like Mike Huckabee by Pursuing America's Greatness, does not fall under the regulation because...
Well, I know it's not under the regulation, but would your theory of the First Amendment...
Of course not.
And why not?
Because the title of a book is not the name under which a committee is conducting its activities, which is the special project definition in the regulation. By contrast, the commission has specifically found that operation of a political committee's website, like in the Newt Watch AO advisory opinion, the commission did determine that that is the way in which the political committee is interacting with the public. And as the district court found, it would be improper to conclude that a committee could vitiate the name identification requirement by having a formal registered name with the FEC and then going out into the real world and interacting with the public under a name under which it's doing business or under which it's doing
activity. How about a website that was HillaryTheMovie.com? That's prohibited?
I'm not sure I understand. What would be the website would be by a political committee?
No, an unauthorized committee, and the website is HillaryTheMovie.com during an election campaign.
It would depend on whether the website would be viewed as a special project of the committee, and under the Newt Watch advisory opinion.
The Hillary the Movie was Citizens United.
Right, but Citizens United wasn't a political committee, and they were, and so the movie itself wasn't a special project under which it was conducting its activities. Citizens United produced the movie.
So an organization that's not a political committee can do all of that, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. Okay. But in this context,
what's the definition of a political committee?
A political committee meets the standard for political committee if it meets the expenditure or contribution requirements of the Act 30101A4, I believe. That's the contribution definition, and if it has the major purpose of the election or nomination of a candidate, that's the major purpose test that Buckley v. Vallejo found constitutionally required. But especially on this point about Reed, which is really the centerpiece of Appellant's case, I want to be clear that case does not purport to overrule the intermediate scrutiny that applies to FECA's disclosure requirements. And, you know, as the Supreme Court said in Whitman v. American Trucking, you know, Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. And you know, this court has also found that the Supreme Court doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. Citizens United and Buckley and McConnell are not obscure cases.
So do you disagree with this, that Reed told us how to make the distinction, how to figure out if something is content-based regulation, right? And it said you pick up the text and look at it on its face. And I think that's the gravamen of your opponent's argument.
That is exactly the gravamen.
So when you pick up the regulation and look in its face, does it distinguish between types of communication based on their content or not?
The gravamen.
That's not the end of the inquiry, Anders, but that step of the inquiry, when you pick up the regulation, look on its face.
If it is a content-based restriction, yes. But our argument is that it's not.
The way you find out if it's a content-based distinction is you pick it up and look at it. That's the first step in Reed, right? And when we do that, just the first step, not the end of the inquiry, what do we find?
But as Judge Randolph was pointing out, there are all kinds of disclosure requirements.
But what do we find when we look at this regulation?
That the regulation restricts the use of names.
It distinguishes between types of communication based on their content. That may not be the end of the inquiry, but that's an important part of the inquiry that Reed tells us we have to make.
I don't think Reed does tell the court that it has to make that inquiry, because the Supreme Court, in all these other decisions which have not been overruled, holds that to evaluate the constitutionality of a disclosure requirement, the court applies intermediate scrutiny, and exacting scrutiny requires an important interest in a substantial relation. I happen to believe that we can satisfy strict scrutiny in this case. It's not fatal, but it doesn't apply because the Supreme Court wasn't...
How can you satisfy strict scrutiny in this case?
To satisfy strict scrutiny, one needs a compelling interest.
How can you satisfy it here?
We can satisfy it on the basis of the Supreme Court's pronouncement in Burson v. Freeman that preventing confusion surrounding elections satisfied is, constitutes a compelling governmental interest. Not misleading the public, not defrauding the public, all qualify as critical, the most compelling.
Well, if that's true, then you can regulate the content of the text that accompanies the Facebook post or the Twitter post.
Well,
I believe that goes to the tailoring, right, Your Honor? And with respect to tailoring, the Eastern District of Virginia found that the name regulation as it exists is the least restrictive means. That's the strict standard of scrutiny. And we can meet that because the FEC has...
Are we bound by the learned decisions of the Eastern District of Virginia?
No, Your Honor. My point was only to say that the only two courts that have considered Reed's applicability to this case, to this requirement, have concluded that Reed doesn't apply. And that's the result that we urge because we don't believe that the Supreme Court intended to overrule.
I am rather confused. We talk about confusion. Confused about why this is a disclosure requirement, as Judge Kavanaugh said, because you pick it up, and if it says, I don't like Mike Huckabee, that's fine, but if it says, I like Mike Huckabee, that's illegal. Now, why isn't that content discrimination? I don't get it.
It's disclosure, Your Honor, because in the context of the former, where it's, I don't like Mike Huckabee, what's being communicated is that this is not Mike Huckabee speaking. What the record below showed is that people were actually confused about whether this Facebook page was speech made on Mike Huckabee's behalf or not. When there isn't that
kind
of... Well,
what if it says children for Mike Huckabee?
Well,
people confuse that and think it's Mike Huckabee talking?
Well, the commission has determined that the use of the candidate's name does have this potential to mislead the public, even particularly the elderly.
The commission's also determined that it's not just the candidate's name, it's... What is said in conjunction with the candidate's name, and if what's said in conjunction with the candidate's name is or steel workers for Mike Huckabee, then why is that illegal?
It's not. The commission has determined that the use of the candidate's name under any operation that the committee is using has this potential for confusion and fundraising abuse in all of these contexts. And that the name identification requirement, as this court said in Common Cause, works in tandem with the other disclosure provisions of the Act, like 52 USC 30120. I see my time is up, but I would urge the court to, and if there are no further questions, we urge the court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. Trzcinski, I believe you have 3 minutes to... In rebuttal, though, right?
First of all, Your Honor, I just want to stress again that in working with my client on this matter, my client has not fundraised on these pages and doesn't intend to, and we will be providing a supplemental affidavit to that effect. Second, with respect to truth and confusion, we've got two Supreme Court cases that are relatively recent. There's the Ohio Elections Commission case and the Alvarez case, both of which the court said the First Amendment trumps over government efforts to not have voters confused or people misled. I mean, Alvarez obviously was the stolen ballot case, and the Ohio Elections Commission was the case about whether or not the Ohio Elections Commission could regulate the truth of statements made in political campaigns. Judge Griffith, with respect to your question about whether the disclaimer requirements essentially can cure any confusion, I would point you to, and I will not read it since you asked me not to, footnotes 21 and 22 of the Common Cause decision that looked at the original version of the regulation implementing the statute pretty plainly addresses this court's concerns and this court's statements that the disclosure that can be attached to these web pages and that is required to be attached to these web pages should address.
What about Reed? It seems to me Reed is your strongest argument, and your opponent has said Reed just doesn't apply here.
Your Honor, we see nothing in the text of Reed that says that it doesn't apply. They say, well, it's only limited to directional signs, but other courts...
It wasn't an election case, right?
It was not an election case, Your Honor.
And we have shown, the Supreme Court has shown a proclivity to highly regulate political speech, right?
That is true, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't this case be outside of Reed in that regard?
Your Honor, nothing in Reed indicates that it's cabined to particular subject matters. It's the First Amendment. And if you look at how other courts have applied Reed since the Reed decision was issued, it's been applied by the Fourth Circuit to override a ban on political robocalls in South Carolina. It's been applied by district courts to strike down prohibitions on ballot selfies, which are related. That's where you try to take a picture of yourself with your ballot. States have prohibited that. District courts in at least two states have struck that down. The Ninth Circuit has relied on Reed in striking down a statute that was similar to the Stolen Valor Act. So there's lots of context where courts have gone beyond the signed context. There's nothing in Reed that says, no, Reed applies except to cases involving elections. And, Your Honor, I guess our biggest reason that we think that what the FEC is trying to tell you doesn't make sense in light of Reed is that this whole regulation is not about disclosure or disclaimer. There is no words that I can put on the page, no document that I can file with the FEC that allows my client to use the website I Like Mike Huckabee. It's a flat ban. And that's why this is not a disclosure or disclaimer requirement. And with that, Your Honors, I see that my time is up.
Great. Thank you very much. The case is